Välkommen till Hästveterinärerna. Det här är podden för dig som är veterinär eller djursjukskötare och arbetar med häst. I Hästveterinärerna pratar vi om tillstånd och sjukdomar som kan drabba hästar. Men vi tar också upp andra ämnen som är relevanta för dig som arbetar med hästsjukvård. Den här podcasten görs av Böhringer Ingelheim och med den här podden vill vi ge något tillbaka till dig som arbetar med hästsjukvård på kliniken, i fält, dag som natt. Vi vill ta upp ämnen som är intressanta och relevanta för dig. Så om du har förslag på ämnen som du gärna vill höra om, eller om du har tips på en gäst som du skulle vilja att vi pratade med, så tveka inte att ta kontakt med oss. Kontaktuppgifterna hittar du i poddens beskrivning.
Are listening to Hästveterinärerna or Hästdyrlägarna and to our special podcast series on equine gastric ulcer syndrome. And my name is Maria Willemsson and I am again here with my colleague Louise Husted-Larsen. Hi Louise.
Hello there.
And this time we would like to talk about some studies that has been published the recent year. It's actually quite a lot of research that has been going on the last couple of years, and pretty many studies if you compare it to that. Our field of interest is not that huge compared to many other fields in medicine, and which makes it extra exciting that we are actually getting some new research. And so we picked out a few articles that we wanted to discuss and share with you and what might come out of it. So, Louise, why don't you start by introducing the first one?
Yes. So we've chosen a little bit of topics on these variety of articles that shows different features when it comes to the research going on still within the EGIS topic. So the first one that we chose is an article titled Horse Grimace Scale Does Not Detect Pain in Horses with Equine Gastric Ulcer Syndrome. And the reason that we picked this one is that we have this feeling that horses with chronic pain, and that could be horses with the equine gastric ulcer syndrome, they change behavior and they might show some overt signs that we can pick up on the outside. And if we can teach owners to look for these signs, we might be able to detect horses with the ulcer syndrome faster. So these researchers, this article came from a multinational collaboration. It is researchers from Australia, New Zealand, Glasgow, all over the world, Brazil, Australia again. And what they looked for were horses in the field where they scoped them. And they also did photographs of their faces. And then they correlated that expression the horses had on their face to whether or not they detected gastric ulcers when they scoped the horses. So once they evaluated all the horses and they could group them into grading systems, depending on what they found, they also looked at the photographs and judged them whether or not they showed any signs of distress on the photographs. So their conclusion of this study was that, unfortunately, there were no specific markers on the photographs or the facial expressions of these horses that revealed that the horses had any ulcers. So the horse grimace scale, we have a lot of pain face scales available for use in animals, but this particular horse grimace scale could not detect any signs of pain from these horses. So that's the conclusion of this study. Now, a lot of researchers right now, they're looking into another types of pain detection scores. And one of them is the written horse pain ethogram that Dr. Sue Dyson has been looking at as well. And I'm pretty sure that in not so long we will have more information whether that particular type of evaluation could reveal some of these pain markers from horses with EGIS. So that's going to be very interesting to follow.
Doesn't this also go along quite well with the fact that symptoms in general of EGIS is very often vague and diffuse, and it's difficult to detect? And I'm also thinking about one study that Dr. Mike Hewitson was talking about with us when we were recording webinars and podcasts with him last year. He told us about a study where they had looked specifically at symptoms that were given by the owner or told by the owner, and saw if they could correlate it with findings on gastroscopy. And he found that there was actually no correlation or very little correlation between both, I think, severity of ulcers and what the owners had reported as symptoms. And that, again, comes back to what we were talking about earlier, the detective work that is required and the importance of having the whole story.
Yes, exactly.
The whole history of the horse and behavior changes and everything like that. So,
and it also comes to show that horses are extremely good at hiding pain, essentially. And that's what we know. And some horse breeds are different. Some of the cold breeds, the draft horses, they're extremely good at hiding any signs of pain. And that definitely goes into the EGIS as well, that they are very difficult to pick up. And that's why the owner's information that they can give you are so extremely important. So if the owner says that the horse has changed behavior, you have to believe them because they know their horse best.
Yeah. But it's at least very encouraging that this is a field that there is research being done in, and that hopefully we will be able to get more information about the symptoms and what horses actually show in the future.
Yeah. So for the next study or the next three studies, we're looking specifically at what has been looked at for the cause, potential causes for the glandular ulcers. So the glandular ulcers have always, up until now, been very puzzling to figure out why they develop, and nobody has cracked that code yet. And that's why we've seen in the recent years that a lot of studies are focusing specifically on the glandular gastric disease process. The first study that we're looking at is focusing on whether these glandular ulcers have an infectious component of the pathophysiology. And in this study titled "The Equine Gamma Herpes Virus Presence and Viral Load Are Not Associated with Equine Glandular Gastric Disease." So the title implies that we're going to look at whether herpes virus specifically play a part in this disease process. And unfortunately, as the title indicates as well, this was not the case. So again, one of those negative articles that are quite important to also publish. So we're sure that we're excluding a lot of these causes, so we're not looking in the wrong places. But this study have been performed by researchers from the Cornell University. And the reason why they did this in the first place was some years ago, they looked at glandular mucosa and detected that they could find a lot of these gamma herpes viruses present in the mucosa. They weren't specifically looking for ulcers at the time. They were just looking for what infectious pathogens could you find in normal mucosa down there. And so these people, they of course realized that they had to look for whether virus plays a part of this disease. So they designed the study where they did biopsies in the field. So these are real patients. They did biopsies of the horses that they scoped, so of normal mucosa and also mucosa from horses with lesions. And then if they had a horse with a lesion, they also made sure to take a biopsy from a normal part of the stomach as well, so they could compare whether or not we had an extra amount of viruses in the deceased mucosa compared to the healthier looking mucosa. And then again, they had all the control horses. So what they found was that in the healthy horses, so the horses that has no disease in the stomach, they actually find a higher viral load. So the viruses that they were looking for was equine herpes virus 2 and equine herpes virus 5. So these are termed the gamma viruses. And they saw a higher load of herpes virus in those normal appearing mucosa. And when they looked at the horses with lesions, they did find these viruses, but they were in a lower load. Now, what does that mean? We don't know if that has any significance, but it definitely comes to the conclusion that it does not seem like these type of herpes viruses have anything to do with development of the disease. So I think that's an important piece of the puzzle. So we all know that the horses get infected with a lot of these herpes viruses when they're young. And again, when you look at those two specific herpes viruses, we can find them in the glandular mucosal cells, and they seem to not be inducing any disease that we know of this far. So I think that's an important piece of the information. They also did a lot of histopathology, which is interesting. And in the lesions in the stomach, they saw that most of the lesions that they thought would become clear ulcers were in fact not ulcers. They were more a disease process that they could term a lymphocytic plasmacytic gastritis. So not necessarily a breach of the basal membrane in the mucosa, but more of a superficial lesion that you could see from the outside. And if you look through the mucosal layer, the submucosal layers, it was infiltrated with lymphocytes and plasmacytes. So more of a gastritis situation than an actual ulcer or erosion. So very interesting.
Do you think, because we talked also in the previous episodes about the Helicobacter bacteria and that we have rejected this as a cause for gastric ulceration in horses, but I mean, that doesn't mean that there could be other infectious components to it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's also like a good segue to the next study about the microbiome mm-hmm. in the stomach, because yeah. they also talk about infectious or pathogenic reasons or issues that could influence the mucosa and the glandular ulcers. Can you talk a little bit about that study?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So we know on all mucosal surfaces in the body, you have a resident bacterial count. And if you have a good balance in the normal counts of these bacteria, you have a normal, healthy microbiome. The microbiome plays an enormous part of your immune system in the body and then the gastrointestinal tract specifically. And this topic has been researched a lot the latest years, both human medicine, all other kinds of veterinary medicine, but in specifically also the horses, because their microbiome is so complex and we don't know yet how a normal microbiome of the gastrointestinal tract looks, but we're getting more and more information. But this next study is looking at that specifically in the equine glandular stomach. So it's termed the field study examining the mucosal microbiome in equine glandular gastric disease. And it's out of the University of Missouri and Louisiana State University in the United States. And what they did is they looked at these lesions as well and compared it to normal tissue in the same horses. So it's a bit the same build as the virus study. So they're looking at both healthy and diseased horses, and they're doing biopsies of both the healthy and the diseased horses. And in the diseased horses, we get biopsies from both normal tissue and also the actual lesions. And when they compared those two areas of the stomach within the lesion stomachs, they did see that they had a change in the composition of this microbiome. So it was different in the normal tissues compared to where the lesions were. Now, I can say that maybe that was caused by having an ulcer, so the ulcer was there in the first place, and that changed the microbiome in that section, or the microbiome would change due to something else, and then the ulcer developed. We don't know, but we could just see, as of this point, we can see that there is a change in the microbiome with the lesions. So extremely interesting research. So some people would start saying that, okay, if there is a change to the bacteria in the mucosa, why don't we start treating with antibiotics? And that's a big discussion when it comes to the treatment. These researchers conclude that there is no indication that this change in the microbiome should be treated with antibiotics. So there was no advice for that. So still one of those things that we do not recommend using antibiotics for treatment of glandular ulcer disease. A secondary objective in this study was to also look at diet and exercise duration, if whether that was a risk factor for this glandular disease. The diets itself did not have any particular, it didn't seem like that was a risk factor in this study. But the exercise duration did reveal that the horses in this study, if they exercised more than 180 minutes per week, then that was that came out as the risk factor in their statistical analysis for having the development of the glandular disease. So again, one of those studies that support that exercise duration during a week is a risk factor for this disease. We've heard this before in previous studies where horses that were ridden more than 5 days a week also had an increased risk for glandular disease. So it is one of those things that we have to keep an eye on, because we have more and more support for our use of the horse. If we overuse them, that might predispose them for glandular disease.
I think it's also really interesting that this was also the only risk factor that this study identified, and that as you said, diet, they looked at whether or not the horses got sweet feed, whether or not, or how much hay they got, and so on and so forth. And that this didn't seem to have an influence on whether they had glandular ulcers or not, which is also something that I think we've been discussing before, that the ulcers that are more or less 100% affected by feeding per se are the non-glandular ulcers. Yes. And when it comes to the glandular ones, it's just a much more complex disease, and it's not at all as clear lines, which I think these results also confirms.
Yeah. I guess that takes us to the last of our four articles that we were going to talk about, and that that looks into, in fact, feeding and what that does to the process of the glandular disease in a different, from a different angle. And Maria, can you tell us about that study?
Yeah, so this study is called The Effect of Diet Composition on Glandular Gastric Disease in Horses. And this study was carried out by Samy Julien and his team in Dijon in France. And they have been doing loads of research on how different sorts of feed affect the gastrointestinal tract of the horse. In fact, a lot of what we know about the horse's ability to digest starch and also other nutrients and how it affects the microbiome of the horse comes from research performed by this team in France. So it's a very experienced group. And in this study, they looked at what effect sugar and starch has on the mucosa of the stomach, of the glandular part of the stomach, and whether exchanging some of that sugar and starch-rich feed to lucerne pellets, alfalfa and lucerne is the same, and if that would have any impact on the gastric mucosa in this part of the stomach. And so they had 82 horses. They were all French trotters, 2 to 3 years of age, and they all had a similar training program. And these were recruited on farms, so they were. It's really a field study. Yeah. And they were split into two groups that was randomly assigned to either the lucerne group or the control group. And these two groups both received an ad libitum amount of hay, and their daily intake was estimated at between 6.3 and 9.5 kilos of hay. The control group received around 5.7 kilos of concentrate, while the lucerne group got around 3 kilos of concentrate and 2.8 kilos of lucerne. And the starch content in the control group or in the daily ration of the control group was almost 80% higher than in the Lucerne group. So 1,925 grams versus 1,060 grams. So pretty large or pretty big difference in the starch content of these both groups' diets. And these horses were scoped at day 0, day 21, and day 42. And the glandular ulcers were then graded 0 to 4. And the ulcerated horses that they found on day 0, they were then categorized as having either a score of 0 to 1 and 2 or above. So the cutoff was at 2 or above. And they found only 12 ulcerated horses. So again, this was only glandular ulcers that they were looking at, but it was only 12 of them in the whole group, so 6 in each group, and all these 12 horses had grade 2 or above. And then at day 21, all horses in the Lucerne group that was ulcerated from the beginning, and three out of six in the control group had a grade 0 to 1. So we had an improvement in the ulcer score. At day 42, 1 out of 6 in the Lucerne group and 6 out of 6 in the control group had ulcers grade 2 or more. So that means that in the control group, the ones that had improved in the three first weeks, they had then become worse again. Yeah. What is also a bit interesting, that out of the horses that had no ulceration in the start, 6 out of 30 horses that were healthy from start, they had ulcers grade 2 or above and at the end of the study. And 3 out of 27 in the Lucerne group had also developed ulcers grade 2 or above. And so, in conclusion, it seems that the advice to exchange some or all concentrate feed with Lucerne pellets, it's not in any way wrong, but we don't really know why that is, and if it has anything to do with the content of the actual Lucerne, or if it has something to do with the decrease of the starch content, or if it's something completely different that was not in the scope of this study. Because one thing that I think is interesting is that, so the horses received ad libitum hay, and their intake was measured, which is, of course, something that you have to do. But, and they ate then, in average, 1.8 kilo of hay per 100 kilo horse, which is well above the minimum of 1.5 kilo, right? However, this amount of hay that they were ingesting, it was estimated from not from weighing the individual ration that every horse received, but they averaged it. So the weight of one bale of hay, they multiplied with the amount of bales that was used, and then the numbers was averaged. So it's an average for all the horses, which means we don't know exactly how much every individual had, how much hay they actually ingested. Yeah. And I mean, the range here is only the averages between the different farms. Mm. So it could be a much larger range within the different individuals. And I think that this is really a limitation with this study, that they didn't look at the individual intake of hay, because as we also discussed in previous episodes, we don't really, I mean, it's not a clear cut whether what is the concentrate's influence on ulcers is because of the actual composition of the concentrate, or if it's because the lack of hay. So maybe, I mean, we don't know, but if it would have turned out that the ulcerated horses actually had a much lower intake of hay than the ones that didn't, that would be something that would be interesting to research more in detail. So I think that's limitation. It's still an interesting study, and as I said, it's not wrong to exchange some of the concentrate or a starch-rich feed with Lucerne. But we can't really say, from this study at least, why that is.
But Lucerne has been causing us some headache, because there have been a couple of studies that that almost had the conclusion that it would be wrong to feed a horse with gastric ulcers with lucerne or alfalfa. Can you tell us about what why that was? What was the conclusions in those studies? They're a few years old. But
yeah, there has been a couple of studies comparing alfalfa chaff or lucerne chaff with lucerne pellets, where they came up with that the lucerne chaff was had a negative impact on the glandular mucosa of weanlings, so foals. And it's also been a bit of a debate because the nutritional composition of lucerne, it would actually be beneficial for an ulcer-prone horse because the high calcium content and the protein content would theoretically at least act as a buffer. But I think also that we have had studies, for example, the one that I was just referring to where they compared pellets with chaff, where you would also see that pellets is more beneficial or it's to be preferred before chaff. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there's been enough research conducted in order to say they should have this or that. And I definitely don't think it's been enough research to say that we shouldn't give them lucerne because lucerne is still a good option to give more, it's still a good way to provide more fiber without necessarily cutting down on energy and protein because it's rather rich in energy and protein. So it's a great replacement to, for example, more starch-rich feeds. We can make general advice or general assumptions around this, but we still I don't think it's enough research being conducted to say like exactly why they have found this or that and so on. Something else that was interesting in this study, which was also sort of like a side find or whatever you want to call it, is that something that they saw was that before the trial, all these horses had a typical racehorse diet, sort of. But the chemical composition of the feed didn't seem to affect the presence of glandular ulcers, except for in one aspect, and that was actually simple sugars. So not the starch content, which you might would have think would have had an impact, but the simple sugars, and that the more simple sugars that was in their feed, the less likely they were to have ulcers, which is also something that I don't think it's been found before in any study, and this hasn't been seen before. Of course, that could be due to coincidence, because again, it was few horses that had glandular ulcers. The authors do discuss that the bacteria that digest simple sugars can form biofilms, which can counteract the development of pathogenic bacteria, for example. Again, back to the potential infectious component, but it's a lot of theorizing around this. You know, it's no clear answers really why that is. So all in all, it's an interesting study. It still leaves some questions unanswered. I would really have loved to find out more about the amount of forage that these horses were eating individually, because I think it's really relevant to the outcome. But still an interesting study, I think.
Very, very much so. So if we look at these four studies that we have been talked about and we just summarize all of it, we were talking about whether the horse grimace scale could evaluate whether the horse has ulcers or not. And unfortunately, this scale that we used in this study did not reveal any low-grade pain from the horses, when it comes to ulcers at least. And we were also talking about whether herpes virus 2 and 5 could influence or play a part in the pathophysiology, pathogenesis of glandular ulcers in the horse. And as of this point, we can say that it does not. It is found in the stomach, but it does not cause disease. The next one was the microbiome, where they did find modest changes in the microbiome in the lesions of the glandular stomach compared to the normal mucosa. And in that particular study, they also demonstrated that excessive exercise, meaning 180 minutes per week or more, did impact and increase the risk of glandular ulcers. And the final one where they looked at the feeding, the diet composition on glandular gastric disease in horses, whether that had any effect directly. We could show that the horses that were fed pelleted alfalfa hay instead in combination with their concentrate, in fact, protected them a bit against the glandular ulcers developing. So that's the short summarization of these four articles. So we'll keep an eye on out for great studies published for the next year, and then we'll come back to this topic again and again, I'm sure, because this will be an endless or ongoing research focus for sure for these horses. So thank Absolutely. You, Maria.
Thank you so much.
Tack för att du lyssnar på Hästveterinärerna. Om du gillar det du hör, lämna gärna en recension i din podcast-app. Berätta gärna om podden också för dina vänner och kollegor. Eller dela den i sociala medier. Vi är snart tillbaka med ett nytt intressant avsnitt av Hästveterinärerna.